And good morning and welcome to The Conversation. Thanks, Jose. I'm Chris Vandercook. And Hawaii lost one of its most beloved political figures when Senator Daniel Akaka died earlier this morning. For his 14 years in the U.S. House of Representatives and his 22 years in the Senate, Akaka was Washington, D.C.'s warm-hearted ambassador of the Aloha spirit. Earlier today, HPR reporter Ku'uwe Hiraishi spoke with his son, Kahu Daniel Akaka, Jr.
My dad was an amazing and wonderful man who lived a life of aloha and who shared that with whomever he was with. Didn't have to be ohana or family, but whoever he was with, whether in Hawaii or Washington, D.C. or anywhere in the world. And he was such an amazing representation of a Hawaiian. You know, the true Hawaiian, and then, yeah, he lived that spirit, that aloha spirit, and, you know, we're going to miss that. He comes from a generation of very hard workers, and I think he lived a life of humbleness, humility, kindness, all of those wonderful traits and values of our kupuna. And so we're going to dearly miss Dad and his laughter and his smile. And, we lost a wonderful father. You know, Hawaii's lost a great representative and a true kanaka maoli.
Daniel Kahikina Akaka was the first Native Hawaiian elected to Congress and the first to serve in the United States Senate, an office to which he was appointed by then-Governor John Waihe'e in 1990. HPR political reporter Wayne Yoshioka is with me in the studio. And Wayne, it's impossible to discuss Senator Akaka's legacy without talking about his strong identification with his Hawaiian heritage.
And, you know, he was not only the first Native Hawaiian in Congress, he was the only senator whose last name was spelled the same way forwards and backwards, with one vowel and one consonant, a.k.a. K.A.
Uh-huh.
But he was really Senator Aloha. And we in Hawaii remember him for the Akaka Bill to recognize Native Hawaiians as the indigenous people of Hawaii. And he never wavered or amended that bill for 12 years. The late senator explained why in 2010.
We have tried to keep the main intent of the bill, and we have done that. And that intent is to bring a process that would help to place the Native Hawaiians at the table with the state government and the federal government in dealing with issues that concern the Hawaiians. And for me, this goes all the way back to the overthrow. In 1893, when the Kingdom of Hawaii was overthrown, the U.S. Minister Stevens had a hand in this, and as we all know in history, the armed forces were brought here to take over the kingdom. And since then, the Hawaiians, I feel, have been disenfranchised. And it's about time that we bring them together in an entity where the Hawaiians can now work together, gain their pride back, further develop their culture, and bring back the scientific and historical measures that were used by the early Hawaiians that has preserved Hawaii environmentally as Hawaii. And I feel that this entity will help to bring that about, and that this entity is important to the future of all peoples of Hawaii.
The Akaka Bill was passed twice by the U.S. House of Representatives, but never made it past the U.S. Senate, despite being heard more than a dozen times. Senator Akaka retired in 2012 and was honored by the Hawaii State Legislature the following year with the presentation of the Aloha Order of Merit. The COA Award was first presented in 1993 and approved by a joint Senate-House resolution and given to a person who brought honor to Hawaii Nei. In true Uncle Danny fashion, this was his acceptance speech before the legislature.
Thank you very much. This is not on the program. But I was surprised when they asked me, hey, you got to sing a song. And, of course, the song I'm going to sing is what I call the rainbow song. This song, people understand, because the rainbow is a symbol And it's very significant because it's beautiful. It has all the colors, and for me, it represents diversity, all the different colors. And that's what Hawaii is a rainbow state. Where we live, there are rainbows, that's all of you, with life and the laughter of mornings and stories.
Wayne, there were many moments like that over the course of the senator's career. And we should make a quick correction. I said earlier he was the first Native Hawaiian elected to Congress, overlooking Prince Jonah Kuhio Kalaniʻōlohe almost a century earlier. But he was the first to serve in the United States Senate.
Yes, and the late Senator Daniel Akaka leaves behind his wife, Millie, the love of his life, 5 children, 15 grandchildren, and even more great-grandchildren. He will really be missed.
How would you sum up the legacy, Wayne, from your observation over the decades?
I mean, even if he was never elected to Congress or served as a U.S. senator, you can't help but really recognize him as a person with the true aloha. Aloha spirit, in other words, meaning that unconditional aloha to you, no matter where you stood on issues, no matter what your political persuasion was, he was always full of aloha.
Again and again, when you hear descriptions of his tenure in Washington, it has to do with the warmth of his personality and the contrast between what he brought to Washington, D.C., and what that environment is generally seen as being.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's say it's a cutthroat environment, but I think, you know, he never wavered with his Akaka bill because he had gathered so many people decades earlier, and he made this commitment to them that we are going to try to get federal recognition for Native Hawaiians, and he never faltered, and he never wavered from that
promise.
Well,
Wayne, given that it did not pass in the Senate, what is the legacy of that effort?
I think it's something that tells the new generation that, you know, we need to renew this, but more importantly, we need to assemble as a community, as Native Hawaiians, and really seek something that we can all agree on, whether it's federal recognition, whether it's sovereignty or whatever. Just get together, unite, and get behind a purpose like Senator Akaka did for the Akaka bill.
That's how he's going to be remembered?
I think so. I think he promised to the people that he would try to get this message forward, and he never wavered, and he never said, well, I'll do this to get it passed. He never did that. He said, this is it, and I'm going to push for this.
Without compromise.
Without compromise.
Thanks very much, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne Yoshioka is HPR's political reporter.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Bush Consulting, Sacred Hearts Academy, and Urgent Care Hawaii.
Thanks, Jose. We're back with the conversation. And Hawaii ranked dead last in a recent Wallet Hub survey that looked at the value taxpayers get for their money. In an interview with Conversation producer Ryan Finnerty, Wallet Hub policy analyst Jill Gonzalez said that although the quality of most government services in Hawaii is about average, local taxpayers pay more for those services than residents of any other state.
We simply looked at the total taxes paid per capita, that's both federal, state, and local tax rates throughout states, and then we compared that to how government services rank here in terms of education, in terms of healthcare, safety, overall economy, infrastructure, pollution. So we looked at all of those government-provided services to see if residents are getting some bang for their buck, if they might be overpaying, or if they're essentially getting what they pay for. Hawaii has some of the lowest property taxes in the country, but it certainly makes up for that, specifically with its sales and excise taxes, income tax more middle of the pack. So that was why it ranked so low here, just a lot of that sales and excise tax ranking it pretty low. In terms of government services, it's more middle of the pack. So it seems that Hawaiians are really overpaying for a lot of these government-provided services, some definitely more than others. Hawaii actually did pretty well when it comes to healthcare, public hospital systems, very low depression rates, great quality of healthcare access, very high insured population. Health insurance premiums are not that high either. But when it comes to most other things, specifically education and the overall infrastructure, that's where Hawaii could really step it up. A pretty good portion of its roads and bridges that are deemed to be in poor quality. The other thing here is education. We want to see that the quality of public university systems gets a little bit better. School systems, K-12 public, also need some work. And that can be seen when you look at the public high school graduation rate, which could definitely be higher. So when it comes to education and infrastructure, not necessarily the worst quality, but for what Hawaiians are paying in taxes, they're not really getting that one-to-one return on investment.
And in the wake of that report, my co-host Catherine Cruz asked Tom Yamachika, president of the Tax Foundation of Hawaii, why we ranked so low.
The Wallet Hub study compared what you pay versus what you get. And it says, well, we pay a lot because we're second or third highest in terms of what we pay in taxes per capita. But at the same time, what we get back is like 26th or 25th in the nation in terms of government services. And what they did to get that 26 is they broke down a number of government services: education, health, safety, economy, infrastructure, and pollution. Those are the five categories they looked at. And they gave all of the states a ranking for each of those categories. So when we got to 26th overall, they gave us a 38 out of 51 for education, 6 for health, and everything else was kind of more in the middle range. 21 for safety, 34 for economy, 26 for infrastructure and pollution. So, again, but the way you measure, or they measure return on investment, is they compare what you pay versus what you get, and they found that we were the worst in the country in that regard.
And do you agree with that assessment?
Well, like I said, it's all in the interpretation. There's a lot of economic data out there. There's certainly a lot we can do to improve our position. I think other states have that too. But we have a lot of issues, I think, that need some improvement.
Right. And I know they talked about the ranking of the state of our infrastructure, our roads and our bridges. And the deputy director of DOT came in here and was talking about, yep, we've got lots of old bridges that we are going to need to address, very serious issues about access. And the quality of our roads are, everybody knows they're just subpar, I think, in many areas.
One of the problems that came to light a couple of years ago was that, the feds were giving us money to do capital projects, to repair roads and bridges, stuff like that. And we couldn't spend it fast enough. We had like $1 billion in terms of backlog between the amount of money that the feds had authorized for us and the amount that we could spend. And a lot of this was because of permitting delays. So, the Department of Transportation would get some plans together and ask for permitting. The responsible authority for issuing the permit kind of sat on it, and then the other things in the department's plan expired, so they had to go start all over again. A few times you do that, then you kind of spend a lot of money and get nothing for it.
And so we basically got an inefficient system then.
Yeah, I think that's correct. That was flagged a couple of years ago. Department of Transportation said they would address that and get that down. They in fact have gotten it down quite a bit. But I think, you know, we have some catching up to do.
Right, and I don't think it's just the DOT. I think it was the city and county that got zinged for not spending some of the housing money.
Yeah, and I think with this administration, it's going to be a real problem, because if we can't spend the money, the administration, you know, the federal one, is probably going to say, well, look, if you can't use the money, we won't give it to you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then where does that put us? Right.
That means somebody else has to pick up the slack because we still have infrastructure that needs repair. We still have, you know, these government services that we need and demand as a people. Somebody's got to pay for them.
And with the position that the Trump administration is taking, it is said, well, we want to put money in the infrastructure, across the board. But I guess we're still waiting to see what we actually get.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, we're still, I think, waiting for a determination from Federal Transit Authority about our beleaguered rail project. I think, had put in that recovery plan some time ago, and I'm not really sure where that's at. I think what we need to do is to address the issues that were flagged in the study as problems for our state, and then we've got to do something about them. Again, what we were just talking about is one thing that we got dinged for is being 48th out of 50 on worst roads and bridges. So hopefully that's something we can address. How that's going to be addressed, I'm not sure. That's up to the great wisdom and of our legislators who are, even as we speak, meeting in that big square building on Beartania Street.
Right. Anything this session that you're particularly concerned about or tracking closely?
Well, we track pretty much every tax bill that's in there, and there's still a lot that are alive. A lot of the bills that we thought were going to die have been kind of revived using gut and replace tactics. So, and let me kind of explain how that works. So you have a bill, let's say that you pass in the Senate, bring it over to the House. House doesn't do anything with it. So a House bill comes over to the Senate, and you're the senator who wants that bill passed. So you take a House bill with a similar title. You basically dump the contents, put your bill in, and say, okay, here. So the bill is still alive technically, but it's just especially when the two matters are unrelated.
Right, and we were talking last week about, gee, it seems there are an awful lot of those this session, and it unfortunately gives less time for the public to weigh in, because they don't know that things have been switched around.
That's true. Yeah, usually you get 48 hours notice, if that, a number of topics.
Now, the Department of Transportation did try last year, and I think even the year before, to raise some of the taxes, I think the fuel tax, because they were saying, well, we need to be able to put some of this money toward maintenance and repairs.
Yeah, they were saying they needed $100 million, and they wanted to raise fuel tax, vehicle weight, and vehicle registration. 2 years ago, that bill went down in flames. They tried again last year; it didn't go very far. They didn't try so much this year. So, who knows? Things have been resurrected before. Late in the process, and so we're kind of keeping an eye on it.
Tom Yamachika is president of the Tax Foundation of Hawaii. You can link to that Wallet Hub study on the Conversation page at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Chaminade University, Inter Island Solar Supply, and Hastings and Pleadwell, a communication company.
Hey, thanks, Jose, and you're back in CR8 with our program this morning. And we encourage people to call in to our talkback line. And following last week's segment on toxoplasmosis and feral cats in Hawaii, we continue to hear from listeners. Kurt from Volcano Village had this to say.
I'm a retired registered nurse who worked in infection control for many years, and toxoplasmosis is a disease that is endemic to the whole world. There is approximately 50% of the population of the world carries toxoplasmosis. You can get it by eating a hamburger that's improperly cooked. You can go to a sushi bar and you can eat raw fish, and you can get it that way also. It is not a disease that will affect the majority of people. Less than 0.1% of people that have it ever get sick. And the only time they may get sick is if they have an immune compromised system like HIV/AIDS. I want to just make sure that everyone realizes you can't just vilify cats and go out and start slaughtering cats. Okay, thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Basil Scott. I'm calling from Kauai, and I'm the president of Kauai Community Cat Program. Positive outreach works better than punitive approaches. This has been proven over and over again. Here on Kauai, we've worked with Animal Balance to promote spay and neuter. That works best. And second comment is the risk is very low. On Kauai, zero reported illnesses since 2009. And so I think that's been somewhat exaggerated. Thank you very much.
This is Michael from Honolulu. I was wondering, if the feral cat population is reduced, is there a plan to manage the increasing rodent population as a result? Is there an integrated management solution being considered? Thank you.
We thank you for your feedback, and you can email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org, reach out via social media on Facebook or Twitter, or call our talkback line, which is 808-792-8217.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Achieve 3000, a student-focused literacy platform committed to providing relevant new nonfiction content to engage students at their reading level. Achieve3000.com/Hawaii.
Few measures trigger the ire of homeless advocates more than so-called sit-lie bills, which many describe as criminalizing homelessness. But Mayor Caldwell is going all in on the practice, which he now wants throughout the city and county of Honolulu. Pushback is inevitable, and Natanya Friedheim has the story with today's reality check from Civil Beat. Good morning, Natanya.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. This is a measure that's been around for a lot of times and has attracted more than its share of controversy, hasn't it?
It certainly has. It's benefited some people. There are local businesses that have definitely talked about how having the sit-lie in front of their businesses have helped tremendously. But then, you know, homeless advocates point to the fact that the number of homeless people is increasing, the number of unsheltered homeless people, you know, outside of emergency and transitional shelters is also increasing.
Mm-hmm. So the figures aren't there to support, you know, any reduction in the population. The population continues to grow, right?
That's true, yes. And the idea behind the Caldwell administration's approach of compassionate disruption is that you continue these sweeps and make it disruptive to live and camp on the sidewalk. And so the philosophy is that homeless people will then say, okay, well, I'll just go into a shelter if I can't live on the streets. However, as I said, the unsheltered population of homelessness has increased over the last 5 years.
One of the things I've always wondered about, Natanya, with sit-lie bills is who decides what category of people, you know. Chances are if I went down to Ala Moana Park, sat on a bench and fell asleep, I wouldn't be arrested for it, right?
Because
how I look, you know, and, don't look like a homeless person. So chances are I'd be left alone, but a homeless person would be rousted. Is that accurate?
That is what homeless advocates say. You know, I was speaking with a few homeless advocates yesterday who said, well, you know, if a tourist is loitering, hanging out on the sidewalk, they would probably not get you know, roused, like you said, by the police, whereas if you appear homeless, then you're much more likely to be targeted. So that is definitely a concern.
Because that's where you get into who decides that, and now you're judging on the basis of my external appearance, right?
Right, exactly. And ultimately, it is up to police to enforce these laws. And another result of sit-lie measures is pushing the homeless problem into the courts. So this has resulted in people who are on the streets who have outstanding bench warrants, multiple tickets that are building up. And the state public defender's office actually created a separate court, a homeless court, a few years ago to address the issue of homeless people who have just mounting numbers of tickets.
Each one of those arrests being very time intensive for the court system. Thanks very much for that, Natanya. This is obviously an ongoing story we'll be hearing more about, but thanks very much for that report.
Thanks for having me.
Every day we bring you a reality check from Honolulu Civil Beat, today featuring reporting fellow Natanya Friedheim. To read the full story, visit civilbeat.org.
Support for The Conversation comes from Haleakala Waldorf School on Maui and Honolulu Waldorf School on Oahu, serving Hawaii's families from infancy with parent-child programs through high school, now accepting applications at both schools.
Natalie Clark is a singer-songwriter who wears her Scottish heritage with pride. She's in Hawaii in time for the annual Hawaiian Scottish Festival and Highland Games, a celebration of the heritage and history of the Scots in Hawaii. She's here as the featured artist in that event, and she's with us in our studio, guitar in hand. And Natalie, it's very nice to have you.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's lovely to be here.
You've been traveling the world on your musical journey, and I'm wondering what made you decide to choose that path?
Well, I've always, you know, had the passion to play music and, you know, I didn't know whether or not it'd be possible to do it professionally and to really go for it. And, you know, eventually I got the guts and the courage to just give it a try. And it's, you know, it's magically taken me all around the world. And I've now moved to America. I'm based in Los Angeles and And here I am in Honolulu. It's amazing.
Yeah. Part of your story involves a kind of a Star is Born moment. Is that a fair way to describe it?
You could say that. You could say that, yes.
Describe that for me, if you would.
Yeah, I won tickets to this Q&A session with Sir Richard Branson.
Uh-huh. What kind of session?
It was a Q&A session.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and out of the crowd, I managed to be picked to ask him a question and asked him about being brave and if he ever felt fear. Because I thought, well, you know, if Sir Richard Branson can be scared, then maybe it's normal. I had just left my job as a teacher to pursue music. Uh-huh. So I wanted to ask his opinion on the matter, and he was fantastic, and he actually ended up turning it on me and saying, well, you know, talking about being brave, would you
go ahead
and give us a song? Uh-huh. And the next thing, I'm, you know, being hoiked up onto the stage and went for it and, you know, and started singing one of my own songs. And
just a cappella? No guitar?
A cappella, yeah. I didn't have a guitar or any instrument with me. And, you know, the mic was just handed to me and I had no option but to give it a shot, you know.
What a moment.
Yeah, and it was fantastic. It was just a very exciting moment, and to have his support afterwards and sort of encouragement.
Well,
it
went over with the people listening,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it seemed to have a lovely response. And it just sort of kind of gave me that courage and even more passion to really give this a shot, you know. So
the moral of the story being, when opportunity knocks, be ready, right?
Yeah, got to be ready and got to go for it, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's hear some of your music. It's great to have you here with your guitar in hand. And you said you had a song that kind of embodied some of that story, yeah?
Yeah, this song is the one I actually performed that day, and I'd love to share it with you, just
sure.
A little bit of it. It's called Weakness, and yeah, it's about being kind of brave to go your own.
It's called
path.
Weakness?
Weakness, uh-huh. Yes. And it's just that idea that, you know, we're all human, but it's okay to be brave and go your own path in life and, you know, just be yourself. So this is it.
Sounds good.
All right. In another life I'd be married now. I'd be settled down like you. I would hear the sound of my babies cry, and I'd hold them tight the whole night through. But this is my life now. I realize some things may never come true. So before I go to sleep, I pray to keep my faith in you. My weakness is my strength. I may not be the best, but my weakness is my strength. That doesn't make me any less than you. I've heard this say that you kindness is weakness, and people will shoot you down. There's another way. If you pass on your goodness, there's another love to go around. But this is my life.
That was lovely. It really was. And, you know, I thought of the phrase that's often used to describe American country songs, three chords and the truth.
Oh, yay.
You heard that expression? But just
yes.
That's kind of what you did in your song. You're just a very honest
Thank
telling
you.
Of your story.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that.
Well, that's how it felt, yeah? It sounds like that's the way you go about making your music.
Absolutely. There's no frills, you know? I just tell it like it is, and it's definitely very honest.
A lot of people find that very difficult, though, you know. You seem to have a very direct connection to what you're feeling and the ability to kind of put it into words, put those words to music.
Oh, I appreciate that. That's definitely the hope. So, yeah, thank you, Chris. I appreciate that.
Well, you're sticking with it, right? This is your life's journey.
Absolutely,
now.
Absolutely. I've come this far now. That's me, you know. I'm so passionate about it, and I really enjoy it, and feel like I've got something to give. And you know, if I can get any opportunity to share that, I'll do it.
I think you definitely do, Natalie. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chris.
That was Scottish singer-songwriter Natalie Clark. The annual Hawaiian Scottish Festival in Highland Games will go from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. tomorrow and Sunday. And now we'll take you back to Pledge Central.